I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania's $32 billion budget became law this month, but without Governor Wolf's signature. He and the legislature cannot agree on how to find the revenue to fill the $1.5 billion budget shortfall from the fiscal year that just ended and the revenue to cover the cost of the new budget. Our guest, Treasury Secretary Joseph Torsella, is warning that unless they can come up with the money by the end of the summer, the Commonwealth is going to have problems paying the bills. We asked him to join us on Radio Times to explain. And Joe Torsella, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be with you, Marty.
How dire is this impasse?
Well, it's serious. Dire is a question of degree. But the fundamental math here, which shouldn't be news, is that if you have a plan to spend X and you have revenues that are less than X, there's going to come a time when we're going to face trouble and dominoes will start to fall. What I think may be surprising to people is, we've done, as treasurer, I'm the custodian of the general fund, which is essentially the kind of checking account for state government. And we do regularly projections of what that balance looks like, and that balance has been going lower and lower and lower over the course of years as we've failed to square up to our fiscal difficulties. What we're projecting is that under current circumstances, as soon as the end of August or the beginning of September, we're going to face real trouble.
Meaning there's nothing in the checking account?
Well, right, meaning that our household checking account is going to go below zero. Now, I want to say everyone who wrestles with a household checking account will understand there's kind of ebbs and flows to money in the course of any year. You've got big expenses, but, revenue comes in steadily, and that's normal. Borrowing to, sort of deal with that happens everywhere. What's different here is that the borrowing to cover that period of being below zero is going to be 8 full months of the fiscal year unless we take steps to correct it. Mm. And as the credit agencies have said, that's a sign that we're in trouble.
I'm curious about what the rating agencies say about Pennsylvania and its budget.
Well, it's not good. And what they're saying right now is that we're on the verge of being downgraded from our current credit rating to an even lower, to a lower rating, which would result in higher borrowing costs.
How low?
Well, we're at AA-, which is kind of the end of the good kind of tier, and we could drop below that, which is going to be a place that we've never been before.
Now, the federal budget, federal government, I should say, runs deficits year by year by year. Can the state do some version of that, or are you telling us that it's just getting more expensive to do that?
Well, the state, unlike the federal government, can't print money, so we don't have the luxury the federal government has of operating sort of permanently at a deficit. We also have a constitutional provision that our budget must be balanced. So the reason that we're saying, the news that we've made of saying our general fund is dipping below zero, that's kind of a mathematical reality. That's not an abstraction about there being a budgetary problem that we're not addressing. It's literally a fact that we're going to run out of money to pay the bills. Now, Treasury has stepped up to help the state navigate that over the course of the past few years. We've loaned the state sort of money from our long-term funds.
Hmm.
And we will continue, I've been clear, we will continue to be able to do that, but we will not be able to do that to the degree that has happened in past years. And the need is greater than in past years, and there will likely be a need for borrowing from places other than Treasury. So when you put all those things together, we are not able to kind of float with a credit card the way we have in the past the state's needs.
So the simple
conclusion from this, and it's not, I don't mean it sound like a threat, it's
right,
again, simple math, is that there will come a time sooner rather than later when we don't have the funds in the account to pay the bills. So there will be things in that budget plan that literally can't be funded.
Now, the Republicans have made it very clear, the leadership have made it very clear, they do not want to raise taxes, including a shale tax or perhaps even expanding the sales tax to cover other options, and a greater reliance on things like expanding gambling and liquor sales. Does that seem like a smart and stable way to get money for the budget?
Well, Look, I'm not either the governor nor a legislator. I'm on the sort of cash side of this problem. But I will simply say that, you know, if for my money, if you're asking me,
sure,
that's not what we need. Can those things be a part of a solution? You know, possibly, but put aside the policy issues around, you know, whether we want to expand gambling, and put aside the differences between the Republican leaders in the House and the Republican leaders in the Senate. What the rating agency said is what I've said and what the Auditor General said, and that's we need sustainable and recurring revenues. You know, we just went through a fiscal year where gambling was, you know, a large part of the proposed answer to how to balance the budget, and those revenues weren't, in fact, realized. So there's sort of timing issues around gambling as well as the policy issues. But I'm stepping back from the, yeah, this is how I do it.
And right.
Again, for my two cents, you know, I think we're the only state without an extraction tax on shale. And that makes worlds of sense to me rather than other alternatives. But the important thing is that it actually be real and that the revenues be reoccurring and that they not occur at some point in the distant future, but in this year, which is when we're going to need them. I mean, we just have, you know, we've decided, I mean, my wife and I, like every couple, you know, go through an annual budgeting exercise. And like many couples, I suspect, it's not always the, you know, there's sometimes a little bit of tension around that.
Indeed.
But as we said to each other recently, well, if we just did the spending part of our budget, you know, we'd never argue about this stuff again. Just draw up that list. This is not a responsible way to conduct the public's business. It is something that is, Pennsylvania is, and I'm proud of our state in many ways, we are on all kinds of lists we don't want to be on these days, including states with among the lowest of credit ratings. And most importantly, and most neglected, I think, in the story is what this ongoing struggle simply to kind of get through the day as a state or get through the year does, is it prevents us from addressing our long-term problems and making those investments.
Well, as you said, you don't write the budget. You're not either the governor or a member of the legislature. But the other option would be to cut the budget. I mean, it was agreed upon, $32 billion. But if you cut it back a couple of billion, would the problem be solved?
Right. And well, it would be. And this was, you know, we've done these projections regularly since I took office in January. And the first one we did was different than this. It was based on sort of historic patterns, here is what we're projecting the general fund looks like. And it was, by the way, it was a similarly bad projection. It was, you know, 8 months a year, we're going to have to kind of take out a credit card loan just to pay our bills. But at that point, the projection we were making was based on history only. Then they passed, you know, what I'll consider to be half a budget. And then we wrote back and said, okay, now you've fixed precisely, you know, what the expenses are scheduled to be, but you haven't fixed what the revenues are, and we look to history for those, mm-hmm. and you still get this 8 month problem with this up to 3 month need. But at when we first projected this, it was, yes, you can balance a budget any number of ways, and we all have our different views on, you know, what the right mix of revenue and cuts should be. But now a decision has been made that we're going to spend X. So there simply is no, you know, it's irresponsible and kind of unbelievable to not take the second step of, okay, how are we paying for X? Now, the one asterisk I should put to that is the governor, Governor Wolf, any governor, has tools to spend, you know, to sort of affect further savings, and that would be the obvious next step if the legislature and the governor can't figure out a revenue package. But that will, there is no way that we are, if this is the status quo that we're getting through this year, without people seeing cuts in services and spending that they expect and that the legislature approved.
Well, as we know, the Republicans control the legislature, and it seems that they are very fixated or focused on expanding liquor sales, expanding gambling. If that is what ends up happening in Harrisburg, can you live with that? Can we live with that, knowing that that might not be the most reliable source of revenue?
Well, there's what we can live with, and then there's what's optimal for us as Pennsylvanians. And you know, what we can live with is something that literally lets us pay the bills. Now, live with may be, yeah, my guess is if the revenue package first of all, if no revenue package comes out, let's be clear, our credit is going to be downgraded, and that's not just sort of we should be embarrassed as Pennsylvanians. That's actually a backdoor tax on Pennsylvanians because that means
you pay more.
We pay more to borrow.
Right.
If a revenue package comes out that is kind of dubious, then I think we are at great risk of a credit downgrade, too. The rating agencies have said that sort of clearly. So what we can live with and what we ought to have are two different things. It is my hope, Marty, and I'm sounding an alarm here, and I've tried to, but it is my hope and it's my belief, and I have to make it my expectation that the leaders of both parties in both houses and the governor will finish this job soon. I know the House has called itself back into session starting Saturday. But I hope, and I believe everyone understands the urgency, I hope that they can get the job done as they should.
And what's your definition of soon? I mean, when does this really become a serious problem?
Well, so again, going back to the math, from us is the sort of, again, minding the checking account. The balance dips into the negative as soon as the end of August, possibly the beginning of September. It's a projection, and it stays negative for an eight full months. So I suppose if you're looking at what an outside soon is, it'd be a few weeks before that happens. But I think more responsibly, given that we're teetering on the edge of a credit downgrade, I'd like to see them, if they're coming back Saturday, I'd like to see them finish the job and come to agreement so that we don't have this conversation next week. I spent some years at the Constitution Center in Philadelphia. This is the constitutional obligation of the legislature and the governor, and their date for that, discharging that obligation, was July 1st. So soon is now.
We're almost out of time here. An email from Stephanie. We've done whole hours about this. She's saying, why not privatize how we buy liquor in Pennsylvania? Would that go any step towards addressing some of these structural problems?
Well, that depends on who you believe and whether you believe that the way we sell liquor, which has been revised considerably under the leadership of Governor Wolf and bipartisan support in the legislature, generates revenue. One of the things we've done a lot of is kind of borrow and kind of monetize our way out of trouble by saying, okay, we've got a short-term hole. Where can we grab cash for right now? What we need to be doing is looking at where we can reliably create revenue going forward, not just for this year.
We're going to end on that note. Joseph Torsella, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And he is Pennsylvania Treasury Secretary. And we've been talking about some of the budget challenges facing Harrisburg and facing the Treasury Secretary himself. Well, after this short break, meet the Golden Voice of Liberia. Fatou Gayflor is here with us in our Philadelphia studio, along with Tony Shapiro Pym, Director of Programs at the Philadelphia Folklore Project. We just talked about money. We'll be talking about music. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. The Philadelphia region is home to thousands of Liberians, many of whom came to the U.S. because of two violent civil wars that left hundreds of thousands dead and many in refugee camps. Our guest, Fatou Gayflor, was a popular singer and recording artist who toured the world and was known as Princess Fatou Gayflor, the Golden Voice of Liberia. She immigrated to the U.S. and now lives in Philadelphia, where she's a founding member of the Liberian Women's Chorus for Change. These are four women who sing about the experiences and challenges of immigrant life and use their music for social justice. She joins us on Radio Times to talk about her life and the chorus, and we have some music queued up. Fatou Gayflor, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Tony Shapiro Pym, and she's Director of Programs of the Philadelphia Folklore Project and has worked closely with the Women's Chorus and other immigrant groups preserving and celebrating their art forms. And Tony Shapiro Pym, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Nice to have you both here. I'd love to begin with some music, but Fatou, you're going to have to help us. This is a song called Zomo, and it's sung in Kissi. First of all, what is this song about?
This song is about our connection to the land that we live on, how important it is to us, and people who make farms, they pray that the farms be a productive one.
Right.
So that they can get, when harvest time comes, they can get some food for their people. So when you do that, you pray that all will go well. And the song is saying, what you put in, when God says it's going to be right, mm-hmm. it will be right. You don't have to worry about it.
Oh, that's great. That's a perfect setup for us. Let's listen to Zomo.
Thank you.
And this is sung in Kisi. What is Kisi?
Kisi is another tribe in Liberia. We have 16.
16 tribes, yeah, 16 with different languages.
Yeah, different. So it's one of them. So I don't actually speak it.
Yeah.
But I have to learn it.
But you can sing it.
Yes.
And I guess there is a difference.
Yes.
Exactly. Let me find out from you, Tony. How did you get involved with the women's chorus?
As director of programs at the Philadelphia Folklore Project, I work with many communities, both immigrant and non-immigrant. We go out actually conducting ethnographic research, which means we're out on the street in neighborhoods to find out what arts are being practiced and what are valued by communities. And then we find ways to document, support, and celebrate, as you said, those arts, including the arts of the Liberians who are here.
Yep.
So the Folklore Project had a decades-long relationship with members of the local Liberian community. As you mentioned, they number in the thousands, probably be close to 20,000 in the greater region. I guess about 5 or 6 years ago, we got a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts to do some further, deeper exploration within the Liberian community. And part of that was engaging with artists themselves, giving them recording instruments and having them go out and finding what the word on the street is, what were concerns
right.
of the local population. And they'd come back and not just report what they heard, but because they were artists, reenact or sing or dance or create a drama about the concerns they were becoming aware of. Together they created a drama about life in Philadelphia from what they had gathered and performed it back to members of their own community mm-hmm. who at the end of the performance stood up and gave testimony, unrehearsed, unrequested. And it was from those testimonies, mainly of women, that Fatu and her colleagues said, oh my goodness, here's this hidden scourge of oppression of women, immigrants who are isolated because of language and other cultural barriers, and they are speaking publicly about it. We want to use our art to do something.
Let me pick up on that. And Fatu, let me go back to you. And what Tony was talking about was the problem of domestic violence. This is some of the things that you sing about having to do with women who are, I guess, abused or threatened by their partners. How big a problem do you think that is?
Well, the problem in our community is as everyone in the world, but people in terms to hide their problem. Our people don't like to speak of their problems.
Keep it secret?
Yeah, they keep it secret. You have to read it deep down. So we know that there is a domestic violence within the Liberian community, We know that there's a financial abuse within the Liberian community. We know that there's immigration abuse in the Liberian community. But if you ask Liberian 101, they will not tell you, except they can have real actual trust in you to tell you. And because they know of for so long performing in Liberia, mm-hmm. when we took the stand, they were very comfortable to tell us their problems. And we took on to that. We decided to go from one community center to another, especially using the churches. Because since the war, Liberians that came here, we got so many churches in a Liberian community that if you go, you want to see Liberians, go to the church
setting. Oh, go to the church.
You will see them. No matter what, you will see them.
So do you think there's something about singing or performing about difficult subjects that makes it easier to talk about?
It was easier for us because of what we've been doing for so long. We didn't want to just take our voices by talking to them because they have heard people preaching, they have heard people talking. We wanted to make a difference. So we decided, hey, we can go to them, sing to them, make them happy, and then ask them to listen to us, to talk to them. And it actually works for us.
And it works.
Oh, my God, yes.
You agree with that, Tony?
Yes, I can share some of the feedback that we've gotten.
Sure.
And Fatu mentioned churches. We've had preachers come up after a performance and discussion and thank the women in the chorus profusely, saying, you can access people's feelings about this and actually their vulnerabilities and have them reach out to you to take risks more than we can. We've had police officers come up to the members of the chorus and say, thank you for doing this because we intervene when it's later, when it's too late. Yeah. And here is a beginning of a discussion. What Fatu was saying is this chorus formed. There was no such thing as the Liberian Women's Chorus for Change. There were these individual superstar singers who all happened to be in Philadelphia. And they formed the chorus in response to those testimonies of women standing up and saying, this is what I'm going through.
I mean, very organic, very evolutionary in a lot of ways. Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's Toni Shapiro-Pym. She's Director of Programs of the Philadelphia Folklore Project. She has worked closely with immigrant groups and, frankly, non-immigrant groups here in the Philadelphia region, preserving, celebrating their art form. And she's worked very closely with the Liberian Women's Chorus for Change. And our other guest, Fatu Gayflor, is a founding member of the chorus. Both of them joining us today on Radio Times. We're playing some music, talking about the particular mission of this group. And I do want to learn more about Fatu Gayflor's life as well, both in Liberia and how she came here to the United States. You can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Tony, let me go back to you. You mentioned the fact that Fatu and these other women were, I guess, maybe even are superstars in their country of birth, Liberia.
Yes, indeed. We were at one church performance, and afterwards the preacher said to the young people there, maybe you don't know, but these women here, meaning the members of the Liberian Women's Chorus for Change, they are the Michael Jacksons of Liberia. And actually, we hear that wherever we go, even to other states. Liberians will come up and tell us, meaning the non-Liberians, that we might not know how important they are, the Beyoncés, the Adeles of their country.
Fatu, when did you, were you always singing? You were telling me a little bit about where you grew up in Liberia.
Yeah.
Were you known as a little girl that sang all the time?
I sang all the time since I can remember. I used to sing in my inner interior where I lived with my parents. I was so little, people used to put me on their shoulder so they can be able to see who's singing.
Oh, really?
And they would take me to different functions and I would sing. And one year, which was 1978, a lady from the cultural center, Kenija, where a little became a member to stay
Kenija.
On Kenija. Yep. She went to our village and she went to find new talents. And when they got there, they had the Sunday Society had just come out. Then they said, we came to look for dancers and singers. I was a member of the Sunday Society for that year.
Yeah, Sunday Society.
I was just around them, you know, watching them play. But while I was standing on the sideline, I danced more than those who were actually on the stage. So she just told people, who is that little girl? She's too active.
And how old were you?
And I was 13.
You were 13
and
years old.
That's how she got me.
Wow. And yeah. You went to
Kinija.
To Kinija.
Yes.
And that's where you and other children there performed and learned and danced. Yep. And
the good thing about it, two of the members from the group now we got, the Labrun Wumi Chorus, we all were teenagers in our village.
Really?
Yeah.
What's
we grew up in Kinija, in Monrovia, a couple of miles from the capital city. We grew up, two of the members, we grew up in our place. We sang together, we slept together, we ate together, we did everything together.
And then you end up in Philadelphia together.
Yes, together.
Small world, right?
Small world, yeah. So everything that they do or I do in a group, we already know what we sing because we've been together too long.
Yeah.
Whatever song I sing, they know. And whatever they got, I know because of the time.
And, Tony, there was this Liberian Civil War. There were actually two civil wars. I mentioned at the top about, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that died in the Civil War and, of course, refugee camps and, you know, wondering how much that war still affects the country was officially declared over in 2003. But from your experience, how should we understand the Civil War?
There are many aspects to any civil conflict, mm-hmm. very complex. And in terms of us learning through the lives of the women in the chorus, let's say as an example, the legacies of this kind of disruption and loss are enormous. People can go on to have productive lives, yet they've lost children.
Right.
They've lost ways of life. They've lost their home. And so we see it within the immigrant community because, of course, they're going to carry this experience of trauma and chaos and loss with them as they try to adjust to all that's good and possible here. Right. They carry that along with them. So in terms of the war and the experience of the women, two of them ended up staying inside Liberia during the war, two of the women who are now part of the Liberian Women's Chorus for Change, and two ended up being refugees in neighboring countries, including Fatu.
Right.
And the two in neighboring countries separately, in separate refugee camps, decided to sing, to use what they do best to affect change, if possible, whether it's singing for other mothers who have lost children to comfort each other, or singing for soldiers to say, let's think about other possibilities and put down our weapons. We used to get along. What do we see for our future?
That's so powerful.
Yeah.
To think of that. Fatu, can you talk a little bit about that experience for
yes,
you?
Yes, yes. What I will begin to say about war is just no one should pray war or even on their enemies because it's not a good thing.
Right.
If you live in it, you know it's not good. And if you've been through it, you know it's horrible. Because during the Liberian War, I sent some of my children, the grown-up one, I sent them to the neighboring country where their father was from.
Right.
And the little one, he was just 2 years old, that stayed with me in Liberia. And I had to go to Africa to do recalling for 2 weeks and come back. But I never made it back. And
never
the child,
made it back.
Yeah, we never saw the child. The child got missing in the war. We never saw the child. So war is just a very, 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 very horrible thing. But every country that I lived in as a refugee, I tried to make myself forget some of my problems by just putting group together, performing and going to places where the UN had people as a refugee go and perform to them, and we share our griefs, we cry, we talk, and we go home.
Yeah, you know,
we did that for several years.
And I can imagine, I don't know much about the various ethnic groups in Liberia, but I'm assuming, perhaps you can correct me, Fatou, which is sometimes singing with someone that might be considered an enemy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, because we have two tribal groups that actually didn't want to be in the same room together. So these people fought so bad that no one could believe that one of them could be in the same room with the other. But they did. Yeah. From the chorus group, we have two women from the different ethnic group that were actually fighting. So now we're all working together. They started in Liberia. They're all doing the same. People kill other people just because they were from the opposite tribe that they couldn't stand. They couldn't stand. They did that. You know, they did that.
We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. That's Fatou Gayflor, a popular singer, recording artist, was born in Liberia. I mentioned at the top of our interview here that she was known as Princess Fatou Gayflor, the golden voice of Liberia, a founding member of the Liberian Women's Chorus for Change. She lives here in the in Philadelphia and singing about social justice and issues of importance to the Liberian community. Tony Shapiro Pym, Director of Programs of the Philadelphia Folklore Project, with us as well. And you can join our conversation, any questions or comments, that phone number 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Music and conversation. We'll be right back. It's a song called Sike Lewe, and it goes back to 1984. That is our guest, Fatou Gayflor, singing this song, an album called The Golden Voice of Liberia. First of all, what does Sike Lewe, what are you singing about here?
This song, it's a song we do during the moonlight when, you know, after harvesting, we got nothing to do in the evening, the moonlight, and that's our busy time. We sing this song. This song actually got different opening of it. I'm calling onto my parents, their love, and talking about issues surrounding the farming. So it's a song that we just do during the moonlight, just happy. All kids get together and sing.
We should add that this was number one on the Liberian charts. You're being very modest there.
Yes,
number one.
This is my song that actually put me on the map.
Is the song. Really?
Yeah.
And when you were, before you came to Philadelphia, then were you touring Africa, touring the world, singing and performing?
I was in Italy in 1996. Mm-hmm. I went there on the invitation of the famous Liberian football player, George Oponwia. He put this program together with the World Food Program to help raise money and send food to Liberia.
Oh, wow.
And I went there to perform. We stayed in Italy for 2 weeks Yeah, performing. So from there, I went to Guinea, and I stayed in Africa,
sure,
and performing to other parts of Africa. Yeah, that's what we did before I came here.
So how did you end up in Philadelphia?
That's a good one. I ended up in Philadelphia. A businessman went to Africa, a Liberian businessman. He went to Africa to do business, and fortunately for me, we were performing in a nightclub, and he was there.
Wow.
He sat and watched the show. He came, he said, "Oh my God, you the Fatu girlfriend that sang CK the way this song," because that was my popular song.
Right.
I was like, "Yeah." He like, "I would love for you to come to America to do your new album, to launch your new album." I'm like, "Okay, for real?" He like, "Yeah." I thought it was a joke. And yes, I came.
And that's how he came?
Yes,
that's how you got here?
Yeah.
And it's so interesting, Tony, that this is a hub for so many Liberians.
Yes, that's also due to the fact of when people are refugees, they are resettled by resettlement agencies. And there were some in the Philadelphia area focused on the Liberian refugee crisis, as well as people joining relatives who are here already.
But it's so interesting, I mean, to hear Fatu's music, some of it old, some of it newer, and also to listen to the Liberian Women's Chorus for Change, which is largely a cappella.
Yes.
You don't hear all the musicians behind you. Just how, I guess, like the immigrant experience, you bring your traditions with you, and then things change. You begin to add, add elements that are part of the Philadelphia region.
That's a great point. It's true. Many traditional songs have a kind of moral weight or potency for Liberians. They communicate messages about ways to be a constructive member of society, sometimes through parables, sometimes through humor, and often with captivating rhythms and these gorgeous harmonies. Yeah. And it's true, the comparison of the recorded music we heard with guitar and keyboard, which Liberians still use today, the chorus, as you mentioned, used their voices alone. Sometimes they have drumming accompaniment, but otherwise, and sometimes a shakere, a beaded gourd instrument. Otherwise, it's four-part harmony, a cappella, which wasn't the way they were used to performing as
superstars. Right? So this is a new way to sing for you.
Yeah. Yeah, we did songs with group and drummings, but then when we come here, so we didn't have drummers from our native land that could actually work with us.
Right.
So we just decided to do a cappella.
Wow.
Until we came upon two Americans that are doing real well with us, drummers. We performed last night at their library.
That's right.
Yes,
that's right.
At the library around the corner. Yeah. Yes.
That's great.
It was great. Yeah.
Well, a lot of people want to join our conversation. Let me get, looks like Gabrielle from Philadelphia to join us. Gabrielle, okay. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Okay. Good morning, Fatu. Good morning, Radio 9. This is Gabriel Daniels. I want to say a very big thank you to our princess, Fatu Gisler.
Thank you.
Those of us that were born in Liberia, normal days, before the war, we know who Fatu Gisler is. I mean, I used to visit the Liberian Cultural Center called Kenija.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Kenija.
Kenija. I had a question by the name of Nimna Napla. She knows Nimna Napla.
Yes, I do.
And from when I used to go there, trust me, the voice of Fatu Gisler will ring beyond all reasonable doubt. She performed. She really gave us a message of food for thought.
Oh, that's great.
In Liberia, and especially for us here in the States, we need to reach out to our Liberian brothers and sisters who are traumatized because of the war.
Well, you know what, Gabrielle? Let me just jump in here, only because we got so many people that want to join the conversation.
Thank you
and I do
so
want to
much.
Give Fatu a chance to respond to his really beautiful call.
Yeah. Gabrielle, I'm so happy you called. This is the same Fatu you've been listening to since 1980. And I am just grateful to continue my good work from Liberia here, because we want the people to know that Liberia got a good side, other than just being a country of corruption.
Mm.
So that's why we continue to do our good work. Thank you so much for the call.
Yeah, Gabrielle, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Do you go back to Liberia?
Yes, I went once since
you
I
went
came.
Once yeah. since you came here
yeah.
to go and to perform. Let me see what Leishan has to say. Leishan from Delaware, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, I just want to say thank you, Fatou Gebre. I'm so overwhelmed right now. I don't know what to do because I was a little girl. I remember I used to go to the Providence Island. We used to call it the island.
Yes.
And we go watch you dance and sing. And, oh, my God, you are beautiful. And
you're
doing a great job. I was in the war in Liberia, so I know the experience. And I was 9 years old when I was in the war in Liberia. I've seen killings.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I just want to say thank you for everything you're doing for the Liberia women. You know, for all the frustration and the hurt that we've been going through. I just want to say thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much for everything you've done. And you are a queen.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank you so much.
Thank you for calling
yeah,
in.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And I have to say, there's some hankies being passed around here in the studio. And, you know, who could imagine not being moved by a call like that? And it touches on so many different things, Tony, about just the, you know, obviously the pain of the war, the pain of immigration. Even if you come to what you might consider a better future for yourself, there's still things that you leave behind.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Memories, people, things, all of that.
Right. And sometimes the engagement with these traditional community-based arts helps to tie people back together, helps to connect people with mm-hmm. those memories and with one another to recreate community in a new place in really constructive mm-hmm. ways.
We have another caller. This is Joseph calling us from Levittown. And Joseph, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Well, thank you very much, Marty.
Sure.
And thank you so much to Tony and your studio guest, Princess Fatou Gebre.
Yes.
I was listening to her music right now called La Cique Anyway. That was the last music that I listened to when I was fleeing my country. So every
really?
Time I hear this music, I mean, I just cry.
Oh, goodness, Joseph.
So I'm very thankful to Fatou for everything that mm-hmm. She's doing for the immigrant community. And, she's just amazing. I remember last Saturday, Fatou volunteered her time to perform for the Liberia Medical Mission, an organization that takes medical practitioners to Liberia. So I want to say thank you for everything that you do, and thank you, Marty, Lisa, for having Fatou on your show.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Joseph.
Yeah. Thank you, Joseph, for calling into Radio Times. I want to just make a weird little segue here to you, Fatou. I was looking at a YouTube video, and it was in West Philadelphia. You were singing with the chorus, and each of the women got out and danced and moved around, and you were very reluctant to do that. Why was that?
Because I'm not a good dancer. I'm not good at
really?
Dancing, so... My three sisters.
Tony's saying no. But go ahead.
My three sisters that I perform with, they know that. So I give them the opportunity to shine for us, and I just stay in the back. I like to make a lot of funny comments when we perform it. So then I'm not good at dancing.
No. I saw them almost like dragging you out there to dance around.
Yes.
Now, do you work during the day? Do you have a day job or
what do
you do?
We all work in the day. I work in mental health.
Oh, in mental health.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, we all do. We all work in the day, and we meet every other. We used to meet every other Friday at the office to rehearse, and we do it only on some appointments when we have shows to perform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Tony, we're hearing from members of the Liberian community, which really touches on just this very rich community. That I mean, you're totally plugged into it from the work that you do at the Folklore Project, but it's just a reminder about the richness of the culture here.
Yeah, it's a great reminder of the depth, the complexity, the richness of aspects of Liberian culture. As Fatou mentioned, there are 16 ethnic groups, each with its own language and customs, etc. I wanted to say about Fatou, all these people calling in and thanking her. She's been getting thanks from outside of the Liberian community too, right here in Philadelphia. Maybe you're familiar with an organization called Mothers in Charge.
Absolutely.
Yes, which was founded by women who had lost loved ones to gun violence in Philadelphia. And Fatu and Zaytiti, another member of the Liberian Women's Chorus, went to a Mothers in Charge retreat about 3 years ago, ostensibly to perform. But what Fatu did was she was in the hallway ahead of time and started conversation with some of the women, the members of Mothers in Charge, heard their stories, and then incorporated their stories into her presentation, talking about the bonds of women who have lost children to any kind of violence and what we can do to prevent anyone else from having to go through this. And she was invited back again and has had this rich relationship with other
Dorothy
women
Dorothy Spike
here.
Johnson. Yes. And all, I mean, that's such a powerful group again, these powerful women. We're going to close out with a song, but I need for you, Fatu, to explain what it is that we're listening to. And we're calling it Kana Nikala. How badly did I butcher that?
Kana Nikala.
Okay. And you're singing in something called Pal. So that's another one of these languages?
Yeah. It should have been written Pele.
Pele.
Yeah. So this song is kind of funny for men who always watching out for beautiful girls that are passing, you know, they admire girls. Two guys walking by, and he told his friend, he said, look, watch out. I know you always looking for new people and new chicks. That one, if you go there, you're going to be in trouble, and that might even kill you, so don't try.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Yeah.
So it's a Pele song, and we do all the songs during our Moonlight Dance.
Well, let me read a couple of comments here. These are people that called the show, but we can't get them on the air. Franson says, I appreciate these ladies. I work with many women who were traumatized. Najola says, the work is so well done. Jerry says, Fatu is a great musical artist who has done well by putting Liberia on the map. John says, thank you, Fatu, for the image that you are giving us. So a great outpouring of affection for all the work that you do. And Tony, must be pretty nice to be associated with something like this. I'm kind of just feeling all the good feelings.
Yes, we at the Folklore Project feel lucky and honored.
Well, on that note, I want to thank both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Fatu Gayflor, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It was
Thanks
a pleasure so to meet you. Very, very, very honored. She's a founding member of the Liberian Women's Chorus for Change, born in Liberia and living here in the Philadelphia area. Tony Shapiro-Pym is director of programs of the Philadelphia Folklore Project and has worked with the Women's Chorus and other immigrant groups here in the Philadelphia area. Well, that's it for today's edition of Radio Times. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of the show. The show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trine Nuri. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm gonna give it.